everybody. This is Eva Herr, and welcome to the Healing of Agape this week. Today, I'm so fortunate for the guests that we have. It's Danyon Brinkley. Welcome, Danyon.
Thanks, Eva. Thank you very, very much.
Got a new book coming out, Danyon.
Oh,
tell
yeah.
Tell me about it.
Here we go. The Secret of Light, the end of the trilogy. First, I was saved by the light, and then I became at peace with the light, and now there's the secrets of the light. And what it's about is my 30-year journey in death and how death is dealt with. And after going through three near-death experiences, struck by lightning twice, then open-heart surgery, then brain surgery, you know, dying about every 10 years just to see what the deal was, so I didn't appear as big a fool as I really am, or they kept me on track, then I looked at it after the final version. You know, the save was the original story, you know, made into movies and blah, 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 blah throughout all that 15-year run. And then at peace was the science side, to look at what was even more about this event, the quote-unquote near-death experience, as coined by Dr. Raymond Moody, one of the probably literally the founder and father of this event, and to put more and more the identity of the first and second experience, but from as much of a scientific model, and then what my progression would be. And then the secrets was now, after becoming 55 years old and having 18,000 hours at the bedside as a hospice volunteer and being with 353 people, and then co-founding Compassion in Action, the Twilight Brigade, and having nearly 6,000 volunteers, you begin to see the secrets. You never really know what matters until you're at the bedside at 2 o'clock in the morning with a declarated combat veteran from World War II, and no one's come to see him in 5 years, and he's in the last hours and minutes of his life. You really get to hear what matters, what the life is about. And you know, Eva, what I've always studied, I think that one of the things I'm one of the experts in the near-death experience, other than having them all the time, is the panoramic life review, the great book of judgment, the Akashic records, where all things are written, and, you know, all the terms that are given to that. And from going through three near-death experiences and three panoramic life reviews, which is literally seeing your life pass before you in a 360-degree panorama, watching it from a second-person point of view as though you were your best friend, and then literally becoming every person that you've ever encountered, and feeling the direct results of your interaction between you and every person, begins to tell you what the real value and the meaning of life is. And then the measure of judgment, these are my terms, but when you have this life review, the measure of judgment is, if God couldn't come today, God sent, in the life you just reviewed, what difference did God make? It really teaches you what this life is about. And so what I decided to do, because I always swore I would write the trilogy, these three books, is take all of that I've learned, give people a chronological history of the last 55 years, but really beginning in 75 with the lightning strike, and giving them the benefit of the knowledge that I've learned. Now, I'm just an ordinary person. I'm just this jerk from South Carolina. And I didn't contemplate my navel. I study years in a monastery. I just pick a telephone. And when people say, God, you're so special, well, God called me on the telephone, and literally the only burning bush I ever saw was me. And when you start putting it into that context, people need, what I've learned in this last 30 years is we're tired of people talking at us. We want people to talk to us. And so what the secrets is about is the fourfold path to power, which I believe, without any question, is the way to understand your spiritual purpose and your physical life. And then the secrets, the seven factors that you can hold on to, good days and bad days, trauma, bereavement, grief, loss, all the things that we experience in the human experience. There are seven things that I believe that you can hold on to. And in holding on to those things, you literally become aware in any situation of how it is to benefit you or how it is to enhance your spiritual growth or whether you should walk away from it.
What are those seven things, Daniel?
Well, everybody has a basic core belief in who they are, okay? But that basic core belief is affected by so many other facets of what people say, think, and do.
Conditioning, you mean?
Well, yeah, you know, everybody thinks they, you know, I am a Southerner. I am a, you know, medium income, or like you said earlier, I am a housewife. Well, that may all be true, but that's not the core belief issue. The core belief issue, number one in the secret, period. You are a great and powerful, mighty spiritual being. You have dignity, you have direction, and you have purpose. Number two, you chose to come to this life, but also that you were chosen to come. And what that really means is when a person chooses to come, then in the course of that whole, you know, that whole process that allows us, it is all predicated on a couple of things. One being the fact that you were chosen to come here. No one is allowed on this earth unless they're chosen. And what that means is the divine architect, without any question, believes there's absolutely no one more perfectly aligned to achieving their goal of unfoldment than you. And when you think about it, the odds of there being anyone else on this earth that is identical to you is 1 in 16 billion. And since there's only 6 billion here, then you are the most perfect person to be chosen to come and to expand what the divine purpose of spiritual unfoldment in a physical plane is set to do. And when people start to really think that, first you're a divine, powerful, mighty spiritual being with dignity, direction, and purpose, okay? And you start to think about that, and then you start to think that you were chosen to come. We were chosen. That no one, that the divine architect believes that no one was better than us. You know, that's a Robert Perella term, but no one was better than you to be here. Then the only problem that you have in what God wants you to do in your life is to stay out of your own way and keep in your mind what exactly you're doing as a real person. It's simple things. You know, the panoramic life of you teaches you. It's the little things you do. Who you say hello to, who you patted on the back, who you said thank you, who you told you loved, and who you helped, and when you told someone it was going to be all right. These are the factors. If God couldn't come today, it would be what God did. And you know, every so often a little miracle comes, but nonetheless, it's just us walking among ourselves. And then when people say, you know, we choose to come here, and people confuse that stuff, Eva. They confuse it. What you're chosen to come to do and what you choose to come to do are two different realms. When you chose to come, you came because there's a force of one. You knew you could make changes for the betterment of humanity. And you knew that you're capable of making a difference. Every one of us gets up and we lose the fact that we are in ourselves a power and that we can make a difference in the life of just opening the door for someone. And what we do is we create all these obstacles because being a powerful, mighty spiritual being tends to make you a little arrogant. And so you create, well, you know, people always ask, Daniel, why is my life in such upheaval? Well, it's because you did it. You needed a life filled with adventure. And you create these obstacles because you're sure that you can create ways to get out of them. And as you get out of them or overcome them, you inertly spiritually grow. And then by coming over here and doing the divine work, you have an opportunity to grow linear and vertically. It could expand faster. So when you return to the other side, then you go back to either a higher level, the same level you left, or sometimes a little slack, you know, a little lower vibration. In Genesis, it says there are seven heavens. And it's just the degree of the vibration that you achieve, the higher level intensity, that really makes a difference in where you go. The next one is that we all have abundance of gifts and talents. There's no one here that doesn't have a bunch of gifts and talents that they're capable of using. And living a life here is one way of trying to figure out how to develop the talents for the wisest use. How often do people try to figure out what they're good for? Well, I think that Jonathan Bach did the best, Richard Bach, when he did Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. He wrote one of the things that a person should understand in this life is that you teach best what you most need to learn. So when you start looking at what your mission is what is it that you most need to learn? Like mine is to be nice, you know, and to be patient, because I've been able to get up from the dead, but I haven't been able to be nice all day, one day yet. So that's like my ultimate goal, is to learn to be nice and to be patient. And I think the bedside teaches me patience. Number five is that we choose to live at this time and at this place and this point in history because we've never seen such an opportunity to show how glorious we are. So we who are living here at this great transformational era, the movement of energies that are changing so dramatically, the subplots and the consciousness that's evolving, we know we're supposed to be here. And sometimes it's a little rocky and a little shaky and a little scary, but nonetheless, we're here. And number six, there's a world that existed before we came into this one. It was beautiful and it was safe. It was all-embracing. And the foundation of that world is that we are loved, cherished, and considered precious. The world that you left to come here considers you wondrous and precious. And I use that term because precious like a stone, not the preciousness of a stone, a rare gem. And then truth number seven, there's a world exists after this one. In fact, it's the same world that you left to come to here. What we leave in the world is the uniqueness of our divine mark, and what we take with us into the next world is the understanding of how and why this divine mark was our unique destiny, which is the panoramic life review. And if a person takes these seven principles, you will find that literally everything that's happening in your life can be fitted into one of those compartments. And then you really understand what you're supposed to learn and get from it. And I got this even from years and years and years at the bedside. Years and years and years and years and thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours of talking to people, family, and their friends when someone was leaving this world.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about, so many people are afraid to die, Daniel. And I believe, and you would certainly know better than me, that the worst pain you'll ever have is hitting yourself with a hammer, that the death itself doesn't hurt. It's the things that happen before the death that are hurtful. Would you agree with that?
Well, the fear of pain, now you separate the fear of pain from the fear of death. They are two completely separate identities. They can't merge them into one. Because the fear of death is the unknown, because people have been taught to be afraid. And the religious context of most religions is that you do it out of fear of damnation instead of the joy of love. And then you have institutions and governments that prove to you that you're as helpless as being born in the original sin. Okay, but the physical sense of pain and the anticipation of pain is completely separate. It's the identity of pain, of cancers and these things, like hitting yourself with the hammer. That's a complete different mindset. They've merged them in what we now call health care. But it's completely different because pain can be alleviated. The torturous ability for health care to be able to tell you of what are cures instead of what are treatments. You know, they don't cure anything. They cut it out. They treat symptoms. And then you look at large pharmaceutical companies who only look at illness as manageable diseases. Look at the war on cancer. The only thing that the war on cancer created was 167 new things that they call cancer, and then medical paradigms and protocols that you use to treat them that continue to create more and more clients or customers. Because if you look at the side effects of any product that you're taking to treat a symptom that you have now, you know in 5 years what new diseases you'll have.
That's right. That's right. That's why I support alternative medicine.
Well, I'm a devout believer in the integration of complementary, alternative, and allopathic. It was allopathic medicines that saved my life, but it's complementary therapies that keep me alive. And at the cost of what is occurring in healthcare, we really don't have any choice. But you know, Eva, what I really like about complementary medicine is it makes you responsible. You and the healer and the healing process becomes a joint responsibility. Whereas in allopathic, it's a doctor. He tells you what to do. He writes you a script, and he tells you exactly what this medicine is supposed to do. And you, all you're supposed to do is to take the medicine 3 times a day, not so much change your lifestyle, your eating habits, your focal point, not to do any of that, but to depend on his advice or her advice and that pill.
Yeah, he forgets to tell you, too, that medicine's going to make you sick, too, in another place. But now that you've brought up health care, Daniel, and I've read your books, and I know that you saw 13 boxes, and some of them had to relate to health care and what was going on right now in our country and around the world. Can you share your boxes, Daniel?
Well, I think that the battle for the souls of men or for human consciousness won't be fought in some far-off battlefield over oil or religion against democracy. I think it'll be fought in the hearts and minds and souls of we who are trying to guard our parents and protect our children. You know, the baby boomer is the most powerful force on the earth, and yet we're being so diffused because we have to make concessions to protect our children, and now we're having to take care of our parents. And in these boxes, you know, I saw the history of the world 2004, and then the events that would affect from 2004 to 2014. And if you remember, I never thought I'd live to see 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Because after this, I didn't see myself as an active part, whereas I played a role in everything that I saw up until then. And I literally began to believe because so many asked me that question. But I got on the airplane to fly back in November of 2004 to South Carolina the same way I did in 97. And my PT, which is the amount of coagulant in your blood system, was over 108, whereas it was only 88 when I blew my brain out in the 3 subdural hematomas before I had to have brain surgery when Mel took me to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So what the history is that this is what I'd like to tell people. There is a system of probable possibilities. There is nothing carved in stone. But there's a system of probable possibilities of what will occur based on our free will. The probable possibilities that we have incurred based on what I saw in the visions is we're taking ourselves into World War III.
I totally agree.
We're turning ourselves into a police state. We're giving up our freedoms. And we are losing our spiritual connectiveness because we believe we're separate from everyone else. And now it's religion against democracy. The spread of democracy is going to stop a religion that's been there since 600 A.D. And to overpower it.
What religion might that be?
Islam.
Okay.
And to overpower it, well, it's never going to happen. We're not going to win. And what we have to do is realize that we are all working together, not against each other. You know, I spent over 20 years in the Middle East, going there every year, year after year after year. And I listened to the American propaganda, and I love my country. I served in the Marine Corps, and I die with veterans. But the world that I know from walking the streets in Syria, Lebanon, Baghdad, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Lebanon, all these countries, is that what I know to be true from being there and what I'm being told, it's just completely different.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What did you hear there that's different from what the people hear?
Well, the difference is this. there is a way that we are viewed because we support our policies have never been to make the Middle East anything better. It's been to extract oil at the cheapest price and to keep dictators in charge. And when we go and remove one and leave the others just as empowered, and we still push what we believe to be the white man's way, the American way, without ever giving that a space of where people can see and look at us in common causes and common needs. The repression of those people in that region since the fall of the Ottoman Empire, both by the British and the imperialistic nature of all of us, and in that region has created this. And killing people is not going to stop it.
Mm-mm. I'm a firm believer that we ought to leave our technology to who wants it and not force it on anybody else. Let them live their way of life, the way they want to live it.
I believe that fundamentalism on all parts are wrong.
Yeah,
but I believe that we don't open our hearts and minds that we're this is a religious war. And if we don't open up our hearts and minds, we're going to fight each other over what we believe and not what we know. And when you have women who will strap C4 on them and walk into the middle of a crowded restaurant and kill themselves, and what they call a suicide bomber, now they call them homicide bombers, because suicide is you're killing yourself and homicide means you're killing someone else. When you have a weapon like that, I doubt you will ever win.
That's right. You're bringing up oil now. Bring something else up. You've always said that it's not oil that's important, but water.
Well, it's been a major part about the vision, and that's the environment. What we have to look at, and there's a lot of scenarios in this, Eva, but clean water is going to be what the war's over. It won't be oil, because no matter what, those who believe they have power over fossil fuel will never, ever realize that the science of, like the cell phone we were talking earlier, the quantum physics of theoretical reality will bring about a whole new wave of technology that will eliminate fossil fuel as a need. We have scalar wave. We have the new EF equipment. We have the ability of what has always been coined as a pseudoscience of free energy.
What do you think about hydrogen fuel?
Well, I think hydrogen fuel cells are, because it's just water. I think that as hydrogen and oxygen create water, and if you burn hydrogen, the most abundant element in the universe, you produce water. I believe that the development of hydrogen cells are going to be a very important facet. I think what's wrong with the policy in this hybrid business is that it's still driven by fossil fuel. It's still driven by fossil fuel, but I believe that the scientists of the day, this new group of scientists looking at old theories, are going to bring about a whole new knowledge about what happens. Look at the works of Deutsch and the multi-universe theories, which was created like 1801. But people said then it was crazy that a physical matter could occupy more than one place, which brought about the unified field theory, which brought about the theories of parallel universes. Well, that doesn't really mean a lot to people when they hear it. It sounds like some sci-fi crap, except that the cell phone, the DVD, the CD, and the PC, the personal computer, were all created by this theory. So I believe that the science is going to move the energy system into a whole new arena, and soon, mostly because they're building weapons out of this array of electrical technologies that no one wants to accept or no one admits exist. But back to water. The matter of water and clean and fresh water on this planet and is going to be what war will be about. And if you go and you look at IMF, the International Monetary Fund's funding of programs, it's to take over water systems. If you look at the desert and what's going on out in the Midwest and the West, the the drought that we're in. You know, we're in a 1,000-year drought, and the loss of water. It'll be about water and the cleanliness of water, but it's also about the planet. You know, we are basically water ourselves, 70% water. We are the same ratio of physical material matter as the Earth is. The water Earth is about 68% water, and the rest minerals, physical, you know, and salts, and so are we. So I think that why they showed water was so important is that the quality of the water will determine the health of a nation and a group of people. We saw what happened in, and this is something that's really funny about spirit, Eva. Think about this. 3 weeks ago when you said the Gulf region, it was where we were at war. Today, if you say the Gulf region, it's our own home. And a hurricane knows and understands more about spin than any political organization will ever know about spin. And now the Gulf region is, we're looking at third world realities right here at home.
That's
as opposed to somewhere in the Middle East. And that's the spiritual guardian's way of saying, hey, everybody, open up your eyes. What you're seeing happening in your own nation, America, is what drove these people and the desperation of these people in the other Gulf regions to come to be who they are. And they don't have water, food, sanitation, health care. And the government promises it, but it doesn't deliver it.
That's right.
And those are us. You know, those are us. These are people who talk the same as we do. You know, it's the South we're talking about.
That's
so
right.
By looking at that and seeing the disaster, we understand in 1 4-week period on a natural occurrence, or maybe not a natural occurrence, depends on the conspiracy theory.
I agree with you on that.
The conspiracy theory that you're looking at, we are now seeing a microcosm of our true reality and what our policies have created. Now, I'm a devout American. You know, we came here in 1751, and I'm that, but I'm also a devout spiritual being. And this is the time to wake us up. And when we start to look at what federal policies are and what we're told that we're safe, then we're really not. And we have to learn to depend on each other. We have to learn to go next door and see what our neighbors are doing. We have to learn to look after each other, because we damn sure know that no one else is going to do it.
That's right. Well, I really believe, I mean, hydrogen technology is something that, you know, I'm a channel, and that's something that I'm channeling on. I believe that hydrogen is the basis of everything that is. It's the fundamental
building block. What's the most abundant element in the universe?
That's right. And I think if we were to go to hydrogen fuel, it would fix the ozone, which would cause it to rain, replenish the rainforests, restore the oceans, restart the food chain. And we could go back to a utopia. But somebody's got to do something, and that somebody's the people that's listening to us.
Well, it's all of us together. I mean, the show creates the forum where people can get involved. And then, you know, they go to danyon.com, because I'm always ranting and raving about something. You know, and they can go to just Danyon, D-A-N-N-I-O-N.com, and they can look and see, you know, the history of me, my bio's there and all of that. But I'm making a difference. I'm doing something about what I believe in, and I think that this aftermath of what we've gone through, and, you know, I put out in September the 1st, 2001, I wrote an article, I think it was on Melvin's website, about knowing that this was coming, because I just didn't want to tell everybody, and I didn't want to go to jail just in case they thought I might look like Al-Qaeda, because all of my trips to the Middle East, and then I would have knowledge of this. But I had a knowing about it from the visions that this was going to come. The next is an earthquake. I believe that there will be a massive earthquake in the Merid Fault, which is in Mississippi. I think that next will come an even more devastating point of an earthquake in that region. And
when do you see that?
Well, I see it in the next 2 years. But I saw this in 1975. Remember what, you know, just when you bring it up, Eva, you know what made me famous is this stuff keeps coming true.
Yes, it does. Everything does, you say, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, it just keeps coming true, and there's no new visions. You know, I have a continuous connection to the spiritual side, but I'm not Nostradamus. These are the things that I saw over the 117 basic things that would occur, and this is the general movement where we're taking ourselves. We're going to destroy 2/3 of the population of the earth at the rate we're going, and we will watch China to 2008, and China will see itself in the point of where they're viewed from after the Olympics, and because we owe them so much money, they will blackmail the United States economically into giving them back Taiwan, and then the world will shift in power.
Well, that brings up a thought to me. I was over at Robin's house, you know, Robin Quayle, one day, and we were sitting there, and I hear this rapping in my head, and this information started coming through.
Well, going over to Robin's, you would certainly hear some rapping in your head.
I don't really keep up with. I don't watch TV really, and I don't read the newspaper.
Don't you love Robin Quayle?
Oh, she's wonderful.
I absolutely love her.
But I heard that it's going to be China that we have to worry about, because I would have thought it would have been the Iraqis or Baghdad, because that's just what an idiot I am.
Remember, the next great power is India, and India will be the next great economic power, because we're away from China's a bunch of provinces. I mean, China has more problems than we realize. And mobilizing the Red Army would be a whole lot more difficult than people realize. But, you know, we as Americans, who always have to be in a perpetual state of war because of the military-industrial complex, we're just using Al-Qaeda and the Muslims as something, as an intermediary until China gets strong enough.
Well,
and if you believe the Book of Revelations, you know where else would you get a 200-million-man yellow army to cross the Tigris into Euphrates?
Right.
But India will be the next worry for the United States, because it will be an industrialized power. We know America graduated 77,000 engineers last year. It graduated 461,000. That means the ability for the technological advancement of us is all moving toward outsourcing, toward a more adept society. And this is what India's made itself. China's
That's true when you call up somebody's hotline for technical support.
You're calling India.
That's right.
And when you look at the Chinese, are more worried about India than they ever are worried about the United States.
Well, I don't know why I got what I got, but what I heard was that we would know they were telling the truth, because that was back when that Iraqi Marine disappeared. And I didn't know anything about it, but it said, "You'll know I'm telling the truth, Eva, because the last Marine taken will not be beheaded." And sure enough, he wasn't beheaded.
Yeah, he went to Lebanon to visit some of his kinfolk.
So it made me wonder about that.
Well, but, you know, we're evolving. This China now owes more debt. We owe China more money than we owe the French. You know, every American right now today owes $650 to the Chinese. That's probably thanks to Walmart. But what you have to look at is, in order for the President of the United States, looking at where he is and what he's going to do with his taxes and what he's going to do with his economic policy and his domestic policy, he's got to go borrow the money from the Chinese and the Japanese to be able to rebuild the South. That $250 billion, they say, we got to go borrow it. We're borrowing the money from the Chinese to exist as Americans. And when you realize that we're borrowing billions and billions of dollars every day, we are borrowing, then you have to really take a close look. You have to take a real close look at what's going on and come back together. We have to pull ourselves together and look at reliance and self-sufficiency, or we will be broke and powerless.
We've got about 10 minutes before you have to go. What about telling us about the women in black and the chip before we hang up?
Okay, two of the visions. Two of the visions were about women in black, and they were marching in the streets, and this was hope. so after years of trying to figure out what the women in black were, I discovered that women in black were invented sometime in the late 90s by three grandmothers, Israeli grandmothers, who saw the abuse put on Palestinian women trying to get their kids through checkpoints. And now this organization has millions of people, women, who dress in black and march in streets in Europe and everywhere the same way I saw the vision. But what it really means, Eva, is this. The divine feminine, the matriarchal society opposed to the patriarchal society, must rise. We as men have failed. We have failed to bring a sense of peace and understanding to this earth. And what's left is women. Because a mother can stop a war. And we watch Mothers Against War, and just like we watch MAD, Mothers Against Drunken Driving, look at the effect that that has had on the course of people driving and drinking. And when you start to look at that, you see that the divine feminine, that quality of the maternal nature of a woman, is a power that has to be supported, that has to be brought forth, that has to be recognized. If you look at the Constitution that the Iraqis are doing, you will realize that it's still stripping women of its rights because it comes under Islamic law. And when we pass it, it's always being not observed that this was what we came there to do. And so we create a few little businesses for women. But the abuse of women worldwide is a horrible thing. And when I saw that part in the vision, I knew that it would be women. So I've created, you know, I drive to create women's empowerment. I bring it up in every program. And I married a woman who has six children, so she had five girls, Catherine. So I have six women put me around all the time. And three-fourths of the power of compassion and action, the Twilight Brigade, are women because they are the caregivers of the universe. And so I believe that that part of the vision was to give me a knowledge of that the power of women has to be brought forth, and no matter how egotistically I don't want to look at that because I'm machoist, my intellectual and spiritual self says that's what has to happen. Okay, the chip. Long before there was ever chip technology, long before
tell
in the early...
Tell people what the chip are, Daniel.
Well, the chips were... Chips are right now what's in everything. The chips makes up computers. It makes up cell phones. The world can't exist where Intel produces them. No one can exist. Nothing in modern-day electronics can exist without this chip. Well, when I saw this chip was to be implanted under the skin based on medical reasons. And once that it was, it would create the cashless society. It would carry all your records. And then I had this concept about, and I wasn't too hip to biblical prophecy, but I had this concept about the mark of the beast. And when you start looking at the chip technology now, that they're used to regulate release of medicines in the body, you have a chip that you put in the body, and you can call up on the telephone, and they put the phone next to that chip, and it will ring and deliver medicine. But what the vision said is that they would literally be able to control your life. You could not buy or sell, and they could determine the quality and the length of your life by just... that when you got to a certain point in sickness, the chip would dissolve, which would thereby literally, it would not be suicide then, it would be euthanasia.
You know, and they're advertising on the radio, at least here in Atlanta, right now, every day, put this chip in your child's hand in case he gets lost.
They did it with dogs first. Now they're creating a fear technique. So that children who are, they're running off the fact of these children that's been abducted.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mexican government are putting in all of its officials because of abduction. And they're just looking for ways. But I study the science of medicine because that was what the vision showed me. But what made me such confidence in my belief system and what I'm trying to do was the idea of the water and the chip. But I'd like to leave everybody with this. I need everybody to get them a digital recorder and record conversations between themselves and their friends, because one of the final parts of the vision, that in the not-too-distant future, because of the digital compression and the understanding of the paralleling universes that a device that Thomas Edison envisioned, that it won't be long before you can call your family or friends in what we call heaven. That because of the new this equipment that will come about, and I've been watching this equipment, electro voice phenomena studies, that this machine that I saw in 1975, you would be able to communicate across these links and barriers. And the fact that death does not exist, not only does it not exist, you can call home. And so the fear of death and all of that that will be evolved from this machine will literally transform our consciousness in so many diverse ways. And I think the world of the control freaks, or the people who are trying to literally create the control of our minds and our hearts, has to beat us to the punch by creating wars and fears and rumors of wars, so that this would just be a sideline as opposed to a revelation.
Well, you have a beautiful, wonderful wife.
Yeah,
and I
Catherine.
Know she's got a book out there, too. Tell us briefly about
Kat has Jewels for the Soul. They're a companion to The Secrets of the Light. Anyone can go to danyan.com, and they can look and see. And what people need is every day a way to keep their mind focused. I use her book every day. It's about affirmations, stuff that you can carry through the whole day. You know, we have so much input, Eva. It's just so much input that sometimes we lose focus on what we really started out thinking about in that morning.
That's
and
right.
So what Kat created was the Jewels for the Soul. And the spiritual reflections and affirmations for the heart and the soul. And every morning we all do it. We open up the book. We don't look for any particular one. We just open it up. And all day long we keep that in our minds. Like, here's one I'm opening up to, wisdom. Through my studies and meditation, the words of the masters flow from being with the light of consciousness. And yet only when I courageously live in the light of truth, I obtain a genuine wisdom. And I can sit around, and when something's happened during the day, I can say, what wisdom am I supposed to derive from this? And what am I supposed to learn from, the good and the bad? And it's amazing, by the end of the day, my life is orderly. You know, I have an orderly way to look at the events in my life, whereas normally if I had not done that, I would not.
Where can people get these books, yours and Kat's books?
Danyan.com. Or Amazon.com.
And isn't there a Twin Souls Media website?
No, Twin Souls is it's the company of all of this.
Okay.
Just go to Danyan.com, and it'll take you straight to it, or go to Amazon, and it'll take you straight there.
Okay. Danyan Brinkley, thank you so much.
Eva, thank you. And thank you for being as courageous as you are.
Thank you even more. For acting on who you are. Agape, my beloved friend.
Be safe, and may the love of the light of the power of the universe keep you precious and safe.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.